Hello and welcome to Employment Talk, the podcast where we explore the HR issues that matter to you and your organisation and keep you up to date with the latest in employment law. My name's Jo Mosley and today we're diving into a topic that really seems to be hitting a nerve with employers, and that's the use of AI in the workplace. Now, there's loads in the HR and legal press about how businesses are using AI to streamline processes and increase productivities. We're not going to talk about that specifically. Instead, we're going to focus on how employees are using AI against their employers' interests. As normal, I'm joined by the fabulous Elaine Hutley, who heads up our employment team. How are you doing, Elaine?
I'm really good, thanks, Jo. So, as you know, we hosted a mock disciplinary event in our offices this week, which was just brilliant, really great insights and just great fun to do. And now we get to talk about AI, which is an issue that our employment team are grappling with, but in the context of tribunal litigation. And also we're advising employers about it before it gets to the litigation stage. Yeah. And it seems to have exploded over the last few months. And I'd probably say it wasn't an issue in this context that was on the radar of most of our clients for, say, a year ago. Hot topic now. Hot topic.
Yeah. Yeah. I was at a conference last week and we gave a keynote speech to an audience of HR professionals. And one of the themes that we identified was the use and misuse of AI by employees. And there was a real ripple of recognition that went throughout the audience. It was palpable.
Yeah. And I think now is probably a good time to say that we're actually hosting a separate webinar on this topic next month. It's taking place on the 5th of November at 10 a.m. for an hour. And we'll be looking specifically there how AI is influencing grievances and employment claims and why disputes are becoming more complex and what businesses can do to stay ahead. So for all of our listeners, if you would like to join us, if you're not already signed up, then please do contact either Jo or me and we'll get the invitation sent out to you.
Brilliant. Thank you. Well, let's start then by looking at how employees feel more generally about AI, because it seems to me there's a real disconnect between how worried many people are about losing their jobs to AI and a willingness to use it when it suits them, such as when they fall out with their employer.
Yeah, there is a real spectrum out there. So some employees are engaged and curious, some aren't, some are fearful that it will take their jobs, some aren't, and some are really embracing the benefits of it, including when they are dealing with their own employers from a personal point of view. But they're not alone in that. So the TUC have been thinking about AI for a few years now. And most recently, I think it was at the end of August this year, it launched what it called a worker first plan for AI, calling on the government to put workers and unions at the heart of AI transformation. Now, it's probably obvious that a trade union will want to be involved in how employers are using technology because they want to preserve jobs. But what particularly interested me was its survey, which found that 51% of the public are worried about the impact of AI on their job security. And perhaps more surprisingly to me as well, it was that young people were more worried than the older generations. And when I say young, for these purposes, it's the ages of 25 to 34.
Yeah. I must say I'm less surprised by that. As you know, I'm mum to two girls. Not really girls anymore, both in their 20s. My youngest has recently graduated, and there is certainly a perception amongst her peers that the graduation job market is particularly tough right now, and I think it is, and that AI is reducing the numbers of entry-level jobs that are available for graduates.
Yeah, and I think it certainly is changing the landscape around those roles. I was at a conference last week and I attended a breakout session on AI, which was, it was sold out. It was so popular. But that included a discussion around agents and operators. And one of the examples that was given was when an agent had been created by a business to manage an inbox. So the agent, right, the AI agent would sit there and emails would come into this inbox. And if, for example, the email attached an invoice, the agent knew, recognized that, and knew then who to send it over to internally within the accounts team for that to be dealt with. And right, they said of all the emails that came into that inbox, there was probably only 10 or 15% that required human intervention. Really interesting stuff.
Yeah. So should we get into the detail then?
Yeah, so, let's do it.
Yeah. You mentioned that our employment team are coming up against AI generated content by employees. Could you perhaps share a few examples?
Well, let's start with how it's impacting on actual litigation claims, because we are now seeing it in our tribunal claims that we are managing on behalf of clients. So this mainly crops up where the claimant is a litigant in person, so the claimant isn't legally represented.
Yeah.
Now, the employment tribunal system was always designed to be user friendly. And whilst that was the intention behind the original industrial tribunals, for those of us who are old enough to remember that phrase, the fact is that now we've changed from that landscape, and it's actually now quite complicated, and it feels legalistic because it is. So Our employment legislation, our employment laws are more complicated, particularly where individuals pursue not just an unfair dismissal claim, but also how they have a number of claims. There's very tight time limits. Most claims, you have 3 months to pursue your claims. There's the requirement to go through the ACAS early conciliation process. You have to fill in the right form and provide enough information for the other side, so the employer, to know what the allegations are so that they can respond to them. It's become a really legalistic process over the passage of time, and there isn't a lot of free help that's available to claimants who aren't legally represented. So ACAS, so much more over capacity than they used to. They're really pushed, and they don't appear to be coping with the demand that is currently placed on them. So naturally, employees are trying to find alternative sources of help. And at the moment, we're finding that they're turning to ChatGPT to help them draft their claim, prepare their witness statements, and also to work out how much compensation they'll get if they win.
We'll come on to that in a minute. I can see, though, that there are very good reasons why employees want to use AI. I wondered perhaps if you could illustrate some of the issues our team are encountering. So can we start by looking at general correspondence between us and the claimant?
Yeah. So what we're finding is that often it's about the speed of responses. So there's always a little bit of back and forth between the parties at various stages of the case. So a good example is early on in an employment tribunal case, once the claimant has lodged their claim, the company has responded, the parties are then meant to work together to identify and ideally agree what those legal claims are. And then we have to identify what the legal and factual questions are that the tribunal is going to have to answer. And normally the parties work together before they go into a preliminary hearing, and a judge will then look at what's been agreed. They might agree it in the current form it is, or they might tweak it. But what we're finding is when we're engaging with the claimant to try and take that step, employees are using AI and they aren't properly reading what we've said to them. So what they'll do is take what we've sent them, they'll plug it straight into ChatGPT, and they'll ask ChatGPT to respond, and then they're sending it straight back. And sometimes it's within 30 minutes and they're not checking it. And sometimes they don't even take out the bit that says it's been generated by AI. But what they do, and this is the dangerous bit, they assume that what ChatGPT is telling them is 100% accurate. And then they think that we're being dishonest or we're trying to pull the wool over their eyes. So it makes the process so much more difficult than it already is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting what you say about making the process even more difficult. Can I ask you to comment on whether our team are finding it harder to settle claims because the claimant has unrealistic expectations about how likely they are to win, and then separately about how much they will get if they do win?
I think it's probably always been true that many claimants, particularly if they are unrepresented, think that their case is watertight and they don't think that they can lose. And that's because they don't understand the law. And I'm not criticising them for that. The law is complicated, but it can be quite difficult for claimants to separate out that morally they feel they've been treated unfairly versus the legal test of what an unfair dismissal is, for example.
Yeah.
And that's the case across the board. So if, for an example, an employee thinks something bad has happened to me and it must be somebody else's fault, they might have a vague understanding about discrimination and assume that the bad thing that they've experienced means that they've been discriminated against. So there's quantum leaps happening there. But AI has now upped the ante. So if the employee feeds this into ChatGPT and asks it to draw up an employment tribunal claim alleging discrimination and perhaps other claims, then that's what AI will do. It won't say, I'm sorry, I can't do that because you don't have a valid legal claim. And when ChatGPT then produces whatever the individual has asked for, the language that it uses might sound fantastic to the claimant, as in it sounds very legalistic. For example, it might mention specific acts, and that in turn can then reinforce a claimant's belief that they've got a great case. And all of that combined makes it much harder to have a sensible conversation at an early stage to try and settle the case.
Yeah, I can see that. You've also mentioned compensation. So are we seeing more claimants than normal who are convinced that their claim is worth, for example, millions?
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe not millions, but definitely significantly more than their claim is worth, or even where they expect compensation, where they don't have a claim. So before, I would say claimants were always influenced by those headline grabbing claims and compensation sums that you would read in the national press. But they were really the exceptional cases because they warranted reporting in national press. Now what's happening is AI is reinforcing that view. So AI is saying you have been treated badly and this is the compensation that you're due, but it's all because of the skewed information and that assumption that is plugged into AI to begin with.
Yeah, yeah. It probably won't surprise you to know that I've had a go at this. So I asked AI a question, and it was this one. I have been discriminated against because of my age. I've been out of work for 6 months and have no interviews lined up. I'm 57. Well, that much is true. How much compensation will an employment tribunal award me? What do you think it said?
I actually dread to think, Jo.
Okay, right. Well, I'll tell you then. Well, it started off by expressing sympathy with what I was going through. It said, age discrimination is a serious issue and it's good that you are exploring your options. Okay. It then told me that compensation for discrimination under the Equality Act 2010 is uncapped. So it got the name of the relevant act right. And it's also true that compensation is uncapped. So far, so good. It then said that the average award for a successful age discrimination claim had risen sharply to £103,000. So not millions, but that's still a lot of money, given that I hadn't told it how much I was earning or whether I'd lost any other benefits, such as a pension or a company car. It did then tell me what was included in compensation, which was broadly correct. So it talked about the vento bans, for example, in relation to injury to feelings. And again, without knowing anything about the impact of the discrimination on my career and well-being, it said that my case may fall into the middle or upper bands, which it said were between £11,700 and £58,700. So it gave me a huge range.
But also, that's last year's figures, isn't it, Jo?
It is. So this year, the range is 12,100 to 67,000 in those categories that it had highlighted. And I suppose what this does is it highlights that AI can give you misleading results. So remember that I told it that I'd lost my job 6 months ago. So that would mean that I'd lost my job in April 2025. I suppose it's possible that AI thought that the previous year's figures applied because they do change in April each year. I didn't give it a date where I lost my job, but if we assume that it calculated it on the basis of 6 months from today, it got the wrong set of figures. So today's date is the 17th of October, and that would have made my dismissal on the 17th of April. But the new figures came in on the 6th of April. I suspect, though, rather than doing any of that, because it was looking at a particular source, it just took that source as defining the correct bands.
Yeah, I think this is a great example in a number of different ways. So first of all, you've told AI that you've been discriminated against. So we've immediately gone from the individual saying, I feel I've been discriminated against, and then we've skipped into what's the value of my claim.
Yeah.
And so expectations have been set. There's no sense check of what was the discrimination? What is the test for discrimination? We've gone straight into, I feel something bad has happened. It must be discrimination. Let's put a figure on it. But also, this is one small point in the whole exchange that happens in preparing a case for tribunal, but they're cropping up all the time. But if in this situation, that individual, so you, Joe, have feel you've been discriminated against, you've immediately put a monetary amount on that. When we raise these points then with you, if we act for your employer and we say, well, actually, the information that you've got is wrong because you're referring to the wrong figures, they just don't believe us because they don't believe that AI can get it wrong. And it's gone from a position of you're trying to deprive me of X thousand pounds because that's what AI has told me. So it becomes a very difficult battle from the outset because there's, in their mind, money on the table that they are due.
Yeah. Yeah. It also said, so in, you know, in its favour, it said that awards did vary widely, but it indicated that I might get 200,000 or over if I had a senior role or was unemployed for a long time. And then it offered to draft a schedule of loss for me.
Oh, very proactive. And did it tell you where it got this information from, Jo?
It did. So there was a link to a reputable HR magazine which had published an article in February this year, which had said that age discrimination payouts had soared.
And I bet you checked out the AUT figures, didn't you, Jo?
I did. Of course I did. So the most up-to-date stats that we have are for the year 2023 to 24. And during that period, there were only 12 awards for age discrimination. And the largest award was over 261,000. And the average was just as AI said, so it was around £103,000. But the mean, and as we know, the mean is always a better indicate, was around the £86,000 mark. But if you go back to the previous year's figures, the median award was just £5,675. And that was based on only 16 successful claims.
So at one level, it is true then that compared to the previous years, the number of compensation awards for age discrimination have soared. But it's really important to bear in mind that that's a very small sample size.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely.
And if we continue with that, there's so many other questions. So we don't know how many age discrimination claims were brought, how many of those that were settled or fell away during the process, how many went to trial but didn't succeed. So it is a massively skewed picture. And to me, that just demonstrates that there's no substitute for experience, which obviously we have, but most claimants who aren't legally represented don't. And they won't until the point that they get representation and proper advice.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you've said, once a figure is written down in a schedule of loss, that's the amount that the claimant thinks they're going to get. Have you ever been tempted to respond to something like that with basically just saying, well, it's wrong?
Tempted. Yes, often. But at the end of the day, we have to act in the best interests of clients. So we have to be proactive. And we've also, as solicitors, got a duty to the court. So we don't tend to be that succinct because it won't actually achieve anything. But we do try to explain to claimants why they're wrong and to try and manage their expectations. But it does take work on our part. And we're not always successful because, as I say, there's this inherent scepticism that we're trying to pull the wool over their eyes and that AI can't possibly be wrong because that's what it's told them.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have a feel for how tribunals are dealing with AI generated claims or witness statements or, you know, AI use in any part of the process?
At the moment, I think the tribunals probably haven't got their head around it. So we're seeing it on the ground as claims are progressing, but we're in the early days. And I think when it starts to come more onto the tribunal's radar, well, when it in, when will be when it impacts hearings. So, for example, if you go to a preliminary hearing and the tribunal is having to wade through correspondence, and they're going to have to take on a bigger management role to interact with the claimant. So at the moment, there's an onus on us to do that, and then to get the kind of issues in a good shape for a judge to look through. I think they're going to have to intervene more, because claimants just don't believe what we're saying to them, because right. ChatGPT says something else. But also, I think in the longer term, there will be cost consequences. So there will be claims that invariably go to a hearing that don't have merits. And so I think we will be in a position of saying to the tribunal, well, if there's an unreasonable use of AI and they're not listening to us and they're unreasonable in that, will that issue crop up more on costs applications? But for us at the moment, whilst we're seeing it on a day-to-day basis, I think it hasn't hit the tribunal judges to the same extent, but it will.
Yeah, yeah. I know that other teams, and this is other teams within IM rather than our employment team, and they've been on the receiving end of documents in litigation cases from unrepresented claimants who have used AI. So they've included laws that don't apply here, and possibly worse than that, because it's quite easy to check whether a piece of legislation exists or is enforced. They are actually citing cases that don't even exist. And that, I think, is what they call hallucinating. So to give you a recent example, our research team spent a day a few weeks ago looking into several cases that a claimant said supported his case. Now, some of those simply didn't exist at all and the citations were wrong. Others did, but they weren't at all relevant to the issues in dispute. But the claimant wouldn't have it. And basically, they said that we weren't looking hard enough and we were incompetent. And of course, they didn't seem to get that we've got access to the best legal resources in the UK, as have lots of big law firms. And basically, if the case isn't cited, then it simply doesn't exist. You know, where we're talking about an appeal decision.
Yeah, we are starting to see that come through in the employment team as well. Perhaps not in the cases in tribunal as yet, but now in grievances, we are starting to see it, where we're having case law cited at us. And those are the ones where immediately you just say, this is a ChatGPT driven. But we are starting to see it, and I think we will see it more.
Yeah, yeah. And as you've said, the real problem with all of that is that it drives up cost for our clients, so the respondents. And of course, if we're on the record, as you've already intimated, we have to respond to reasonable requests. We can't just ignore stuff that we think is silly or made up or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, we do. The tribunal expects us, especially if we're the only legal representatives, to take the lead, if you like, and to make sure that the cases are progressing. And our job to do that is becoming much harder. There's no way about it.
Yeah, yeah. So we spent a lot of time talking about litigation, and of course, no business really wants a dispute to get that far and will usually try and resolve it at an early age. If an employee has sent a grievance, they'll investigate and make a decision about its merits based on that investigation. And you've already sort of talked about some of the issues that you're seeing in the context of grievances. I assume, therefore, that the problems that we've discussed about exaggerated or inaccurate claims apply equally to grievances where the employee has used AI.
Yeah, absolutely. And the recent themes that we've seen is that grievances that can run to a huge number of pages. So you can actually give AI an instruction to write you a 15-page grievance. You can literally pick a number. The mock disciplinary event that I mentioned we hosted, someone said they were dealing with a 71-page grievance point. And I suspect AI is involved to some extent there. But also AI gives you the option to make it sound more formal or even more aggressive. And also, if employees don't get the outcome that they're looking for at the first stage, they push the response into ChatGPT and they'll ask it to generate an appeal. And then again, that can run into many, many pages as well.
So whoever is picking that up will have to wade through pages of information and try and extract what is recent, relevant and resolvable. The 3 hours of grievance investigation, if that's what the letter is about.
Yeah. And also, depending on how badly the relationship has deteriorated, the employee might actually be looking to cause as much disruption as they possibly can, but without actually coming out and saying that. Because if they were open in saying that that's their intention, then it would undermine their credibility and make them look vindictive, which is never good, particularly if the case does become before a tribunal. But AI now makes it easier for them to discreetly achieve that agenda if that is what they're looking to do.
Yeah. I understand that we've also had an employee who has point blank refused to attend a disciplinary hearing and is quoted their human right to have a fair trial, not understanding that it doesn't apply to proceedings between an employer and an employee.
Yeah, that is true. We have had that case. And as we know, the Human Rights Act doesn't apply to private sector employers anyway, and it isn't at all relevant to your bog standard disciplinary procedure about some form of misconduct. And even in the public sector, its application in terms of the disciplinary proceedings is extremely limited. But again, it's that example where someone's used AI and AI has enforced that view and given them a spiel in very convincing terms, which has then cemented their understanding and their position.
Yeah. Because if you think about it, if you don't attend your disciplinary hearing, you're basically cutting off your nose to spite your face, aren't you?
Yeah. But they think that it's a good strategic decision because AI is telling them they've got a valid reason to refuse to go.
Okay, well, in the interest of time, can I move the conversation on now to look at the wider risks to employers of AI use? And I'm thinking about information that might include confidential or embarrassing allegations about other people that an employee might put into AI and could then be used by AI as part of its machine learning and perhaps then be regurgitated in some sort of form to someone else that's using it on a different occasion.
Yeah, and I think that depends on what platform they're using. So, for example, at Irwin Mitchell, we use Copilot, and that is a closed system, which means any information we input isn't saved anywhere and can't be used or seen by anyone else. Yeah. But I believe ChatGPT is open, and that means that it can use the information pushed into it to learn and could, in theory, use that information when responding to a question in the future.
Yeah. So are there any ways in which employers can protect themselves against that sort of misuse?
Well, I think it's important to bear in mind that you can't physically stop any employee, disgruntled or otherwise, from using it, which they will probably be doing on their own devices and in their own time. But what you can do is set up parameters around acceptable usage and make it clear that employees mustn't input any confidential information into open forums, whether that's about the business itself or other people working there. And you also need to make clear what will happen if they do. So, for example, disciplinary proceedings. And I also think it's helpful to list that as an example of potential gross misconduct, so you're absolutely clear and can manage the employee's expectations.
Yeah. It might also expose the business to the risks of data breaches and all that entails as well.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay then, so before we finish, I've seen it mooted that employees whose organisations aren't necessarily AI savvy, and by that I mean they aren't using it, might use publicly available and free AI services such as ChatGPT to do some of their work without telling their employer that that's what they're up to. What do you think? Do you think that's likely? Have you seen anything like that?
No, not personally. I've heard some anecdotal evidence about it. I don't know whether it's widespread, and I personally would suspect not, because I think businesses are increasingly keen to use AI to increase productivity. So taking mundane admin or analytical tasks away to free people up to concentrate on the work where they add most value. But I suppose if employers aren't using AI, employees could outsource this to AI and have an easier life, in effect. But they're only likely to get away with that if there's not much oversight about their work, which might be the case, I guess, if they're working from home.
Yeah. So you don't think it's likely then that an employee will take on two or possibly even more full-time jobs and then use AI to do most of the work?
I think that we'll probably have to wait and see. And maybe in the future, as employees master AI, might have to keep an eye on a couple of them. But at the moment, I probably suspect not. I think if we go back to the information that we were talking about at the beginning about, you know, the number of people who are concerned about AI, I think it's unlikely that a vast number of employees are doing this. I don't think we're at that stage yet.
Yeah. I asked AI how many UK companies are actually using it at the moment. And it said that around 1 in 6 are using at least one AI technology. So as you'd expect, large companies are the highest users, and that's followed by medium-sized organisations. But it reckons that around 15% of small companies are also using it, and that's based on very recent research by Forbes.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I think it's something that most businesses are either starting to grapple with or are very curious about. But I think most of us are probably early on in that journey. But time will tell.
Mm. Interestingly, according to AI, the UK leads Europe in HR-related AI adoption, with 44% investing in AI, apparently.
See, that does surprise me that we're leading it. So a lot of our contacts are very curious about AI, hence why we're doing a subject on it. So they're interested from both sides in terms of their experience, employees using it, but also they're very curious about how it can be used by the business and by the HR teams. But I am a bit surprised that we're leading the charge on that. I thought across Europe it would have a good uptake.
Well, I didn't check that.
So there you go. I'm falling into the trap myself.
I mean, that may or may not be right. I just sort of throw that in. I didn't have time to check that bit. Anyway, I think that's probably all we've got time for this month.
I've really enjoyed it. I was looking forward to this one because I think it's a really interesting discussion, and hopefully we've given our listeners food for thought, so they can pose lots of questions to our colleagues Andy Boyd and Joanna Cooney, who are leading our event on the 5th of November. So please do join us at that, because I think it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, it should be a good one. Well, thank you for listening. Please let us know if there's any employment law topics you'd like us to discuss, and tune in next month for more insights. Many thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.